The following is a production of Omnis.tv.
Tonight's show, we welcome back Jeff Sack as we break down the NBA draft and the looming NBA lockout. Also on tonight's show, Major League Baseball recap, Lady Gaga's lawsuit, and this weekend at the box office and much, much more happening tonight only on Unsigned. Hey, everybody. How's it going out there? This is Ryan. Welcome to another edition of Unsigned on a Tuesday night. Hopefully everything is all right with you out there. Kind of gloomy weather we're having here in Tennessee. It's been kind of overcast and raining the last couple days, but still, you know, on the warm side, humid, just a little rainy, so we'll take it as it is. 4th of July weekend is creeping up on us. Hard to believe it's 4th of July. This year is moving. They seem like they move faster and faster all the time, doesn't it? Again, we have the great Jeff Sack coming in to break down the NBA draft with us and talk NBA analysis as well, as far as the lockout and the things that we've, you know, the big elephant in the room we've been avoiding as the playoffs have been going, as the draft has been going. Well, the elephant is now. So, Major League Baseball tonight, as I said at the top of the show. Also on the top, a little boxing as well. Big fight coming up this weekend. We'll get into all that this hour. Something new I want to do here on the show. You know, Michael Buffer always does his entrance, you know, to a big time fight. So I thought about, you know, what I would do is I would call it the Unbuffer. It would be the unsigned version of Michael Buffer introducing a guest. So I'm going to go ahead and try that now. Bear with me. This is the first edition of Unbuffer here on Unsigned. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, children of all ages, I want to welcome you now, hailing from Boston, Massachusetts, Mr. Jeff Sack. Hey, Jeff, how's it going, man?
Wow, what an intro.
Welcome back to Unsigned. Love having you as always. How you been, man?
Not too bad, my brother. Not too bad. We have not had as good weather, I guess, in Rochester, New York area as you guys have had around Rocky Top. We've had a lot of rain over the last couple of days. Very, very strange weather. Very bizarre. We have sun in the morning, and then it starts to go into a downpour, and then it gets cloudy, and then just before sunset, it tends to brighten up again. So it's not great for swimming, and I'm hoping to avoid this weather pattern as we get into the holiday weekend and coming up. Looking forward to that, as always. And unfortunately, as you said, summer's basically halfway over once you hit July 4th. It has flown. Absolutely.
Yeah, it definitely has. One thing I really look forward to 4th of July is the fireworks. That's one good thing about living here in Tennessee is that there's a fireworks tent on every corner. So that's something I always look forward to is taking one night aside and making a lot of noise as well as everyone else in the neighborhood here does as well. It looks like a Civil War battlefield by the time the 4th of July weekend is over with all the smoke around. So looking forward to that this weekend, you know, cooking out, having a good time and enjoying the great country that is the United States of America. But hey, Jeff,
do you guys still have cities that sponsor fireworks? I know they've taken it down in a lot of major cities in the United States because of the economy.
Here in Nashville, they do a big festival and fireworks show downtown in downtown Nashville at Rivergate. I know in Columbus, Ohio, a city I used to live in, they do it's called a Red, White, and Boom. They still do that yearly, as far as I'm aware. So those are two cities that I know are still on as far as fireworks shows are concerned, despite the economy, which I think is you know why not? You know, it's the birth of America, so I think it's good that a lot of these cities are keeping with tradition and having the festivals and the street festivals and the cookouts and the firework displays for everyone and to bring their families to.
That's nice that they have that money allocated in the budget and they can still afford to do it. Unfortunately, a lot of cities can't, but that's a topic for another show, I guess.
Very true. Well, hey Jeff, let's jump right into it. You know, the NBA draft just happened here this past Thursday night, and it was as entertaining as I thought it would be. A lot of movement, a lot of trades, and you know, heading at the number one pick, the Cleveland Cavaliers, selecting Kyrie Irving. Not a shock to many. Many believe him to be the best player from University of Duke, despite only playing 11 games last season. And the number four pick, as I called it here last week, Tristan Thompson, has been, you know, scrutinized a little bit considering, you know, other players that were available at that number four pick. Tristan Thompson, again, a guy I really liked, Big 12 Freshman of the Year, a relentless defender, a rebounder, shot blocker, big-time athletic human being, athletic freak, some would say. He has great footwork. He's a lefty. He can go, you know, use both hands. He's working on his, you know, foul shots. He needs to work on his range and his ball handling skills. But what do you assess the first pick with the Cavs at number one and taking Tristan Thompson at number four?
Well, as I told you last night, that's quite a coup for you to predict that, as everybody was going with Jonas Valanciunas, thinking that Enes Kanter was going to be picked, as he was, by the Utah Jazz. So you were ahead of the curve on that one, and I've got to congratulate you for that. I love Kyrie Irving. I've loved Kyrie Irving all along. I wanted the Cavaliers to pick Kyrie Irving. I don't know if he's the best player in the NBA draft, my friend Ryan, as much as he is the best point guard by far in the NBA draft. Though Brandon Knight is a pretty good point guard in his own right, and probably the best decision that Joe Dumars has made in the last few years. But Irving just has that something special. I think this is a guy that, as Byron Scott said, is a pure point guard, and it's basically the first pure point guard that the Cleveland Cavaliers have had since Andre Miller over a decade ago. And this is a franchise that was renowned for its point guards throughout the years, with Mark Price and Kevin Johnson, as they drafted before they traded him to Phoenix, and a lot of great point guards over the years. They've been basically dealing with hybrids over the last few years, with guys like Jeff McGinnis and even in Mo Williams, who really is more of a two, undersized two than a pure one. Baron Davis, of course, is a pure point guard, but he's already reached the zenith of his career. So it's going to be nice to see the Cavaliers back with a premier point guard in the NBA, and I think Kyrie Irving can live up to that. As far as Mr. Thompson, I like him as an athlete. I like him as a player. I think he's going to be a project, as I said to you last night on the phone. My only problem with the pick, Ryan, is the fact that they went to a position where they didn't have a need, whereas if they had gone with Valanciunas, they would have filled the need that they desperately need to be filled. As we've both discussed frequently over the last few weeks, they have a big need at the five spot and at the three spot to take a look.
Yeah, I definitely understand where you're coming from there with the with the Thompson pick at number four. J.J. Hickson, Anderson Varejao, Antoine Jameson. I think it's safe to assume at this point that Jameson and maybe Anderson Varejao could be on their way out at some point. Yeah. Okay. Well, it looks like we're having some issues with our phone system here. Unfortunately, we've lost Jeff Sachs. So bear with us here. We'll try to get him back on the line as we continue our NBA draft breakdown. More on the Cleveland Cavaliers, and also looking at the Minnesota Timberwolves. Again, the Cavs have that logjam at the power forward position. Again, Anderson Varejao, Antoine Jameson, who is in the last year of his contract, J.J. Hickson. Again, I think he's going to end up wanting more money than the Cavs are willing to pay. So you're looking at a total youth movement going on in Cleveland right now. And again, they stockpile draft picks. So at that point, you look at what the Cavs are doing. It's not a one-year fix-all, and anyone who thought that it was going to be a one-year fix-all is sadly mistaken as far as the Cleveland Cavaliers are concerned. When you look at that team and you look at their roster prior to last night's draft, you go, huh. You know, there's not a lot there. There's not a lot of, I mean, they won, 19, 20 games last year? So, you win, 19 or 20 games out of 82, you need more than just two players. You're more than two players away. It's a youth movement. You build for the draft. Now, next year is going to be a very solid draft class. Very solid. You have guys like Harrison Barnes, who I absolutely love from North Carolina. And I think that is more than likely the reason why they did not go with Derek Williams, who is a tweener at the number one pick in this year's draft. You know, and you look at next year's draft with Perry Jones from Baylor, and Harrison Barnes, two guys at the small forward position who have great handle, can shoot the ball, can do a little bit of everything. That's the kind of guys that you're going to look to put and infuse with Kyrie Irving and Tristan Thompson, who is, again, a relentless defender, a relentless rebounder. He's basically Dennis Rodman without the baggage. That's basically what you're looking at. And other people have said that he's kind of a Dennis Rodman type, but I think he has the ability and has the work ethic, not that Rodman didn't, but has the know-how and work ethic to contribute and be an offensive-minded player. It's only a matter of time. Hey, Jeff, you there, man?
I certainly am, Ryan. I don't know what happened, but glad to be back.
Yeah, sorry. I think we had a little problem with our phone system here tonight, and I do apologize about that. But I was, kind of breaking down the.
That's the magic of live radio, right?
Yeah, exactly. You gotta love it. I was just, talking about the Cavs and the infusion of young talent and looking for the draft in the next season while you were gone here, and looking at guys like Harrison Barnes from North Carolina to fill that small forward role. Of course, obviously, it is a bounce of the ping pong ball whether or not you end up with that type of caliber player and a big, heavy top-end draft that we anticipate next season. As we move on, looking at the Cavs, then, obviously you have number two pick, and we've talked about this on the show, and we've had the Minnesota Timberwolves and what in the world they're doing. I was looking at their roster today, Jeff, and I look at it, and they have eight rookies on their roster going into the next season. I believe probably only about four or five of those gentlemen will probably actually be on the team. The rest will probably remain overseas. But, a team that's really already one of the youngest in the league, or if not the youngest in the league, got a whole lot younger in the draft with Derek Williams. And kind of like the Cavs, they have a logjam at the forward position with Kevin Love, Michael Beasley, and now, you have Derek Williams. You have Anthony Randolph there as well. What are they doing in Minnesota? Is it the weather? Is it the cold air? Is that what's going on there?
Only the cold air between the ears of David Kahn and Glenn Taylor, the general manager, president, and owner, respectively, of the Minnesota Timberwolves. The two guys, Ryan, that I've been saying over the last few weeks do not have a clue in any way, shape, or form, and again, they showed it in this draft. Derek Williams is going to be an NBA talent. There's no doubt about it, whether he ends up at the four or at the three. But what they are doing with the proliferation of forwards right now on that team just makes absolutely no sense. Just a absolutely mind-boggling draft by the Minnesota Timberwolves with some very, very strange picks. The young man that they drafted from Cleveland State at the end of the draft, they ended up sending to Miami. That should be a good place for him. But that really boggled my mind when they ended up picking him, Norris Cole, because it just absolutely made no sense because they had just gotten Ricky Rubio and they still had Johnny Flynn at the time. But they're a team that really, really needs somebody to come in there and shake things up. They would have been a great team for Jerry West to join because they certainly need somebody to take over their front office because David Kahn and Glenn Taylor are just pushing that team deeper and deeper into the basement of the NBA.
Yeah, it's almost like they've actually become like a farm team in the league. You know, they've always done a really good job of, you know, evaluating the European talent, and then they draft the talent and trade it to other teams. It's really weird. They had a trade, I believe, with the Chicago Bulls where they drafted a young prospect. And with the Euro players, it's hard to tell, you know, whether they're going to pan out or stay overseas or not. But they seem to always draft, you know, or be able to pick these guys out of nowhere, and then you know, they stockpile trading picks, you know, or they stockpile assets and then just trade them away for, you know, more draft picks. It's very strange. Interesting to see what this team is going to do. Unlike the Cavs, I don't believe they have the flexibility with their contracts to make moves like, you know, what the Cavaliers do with and really enticing picks. I think J.J. Hickson is more enticing than Beasley. I think Anderson Varejao is more enticing than Darko Milicic. And I probably butchered that last name, and I apologize. And you also have, you know, the expiring contract of Antoine Jameson, a true professional in all sense of the words in the NBA, who really would fit in with a championship caliber team should there be a season at trade deadline.
I agree. I think the guy you were referring to is Donatas Montiejunas, who yes. They ended up trading to Chicago. And again, this young man looks like he's going to be an NBA talent. Once he makes it into the NBA, it's going to be a few years because he is stuck playing in the EuroLeague for the next couple of years. But once this young man comes into the NBA, he should be a finished product and ready to contribute to a pretty potent Bulls team. And Carlos Boozer probably by that time will be ready to either hang it up or move on to greener pastures. So we will see what's going on with that. And I agree with you. They Beasley's a guy that will probably be traded. His stock has fallen down radically since he was drafted in the NBA along with Derrick Rose a few years ago. As we talked about the last time I was on, these were guys who were looked at the time as 1 and 1A in that NBA draft. And though Derrick Rose won the MVP this past year, Michael Beasley is now on his second team and could very easily be on his third team by the time the next season starts. Milicic, I think, is a guy that they're going to stick with because he seems to have found a home there and did a lot better with the Timberwolves in the year and a half that he's been with that team than he did at any other stop during his NBA career. Again, just curiouser and curiouser to quote Lewis Carroll, and it really doesn't make a lot of sense to exactly what they're doing right now, and it will remain to be seen if David Kahn has the wherewithal to be able to pull off some trades and get some pieces and to fill that team and get them out of the basement where they've been mired in for the last few years.
Yeah, a lot of work to be done there in Minnesota. Another team that I really like as far as their draft night is the Washington Wizards. And poor John Vesely, when you look up his name on Google now, it comes up John Vesely's girlfriend with his big-time kiss with his girlfriend as he was drafted there. You look up John Vesely, and it's John Vesely's girlfriend. Very attractive young woman. But this guy, you know, he's been known as been monikered anyway as the European Blake Griffin. That's, you know, interesting terminology used by him. Again, another Euro guy, high energy forward, incredible leaping ability, a guy who a lot of people think will be in the dunk contest once he gets in the league. What do you think of the Washington Wizards and the way they built in the last couple of years with John Wall last year and now with the picks of Vesely and looking at who else they had here? Sorry.
Chris Singleton.
Yes, from Florida State. Yeah.
Very, very good picks. Two very, very good picks, Ryan. I agree with you 100%. Vesely is a pure athlete. The kid can jump out of the gym. There's no ands, ifs, or buts about it. And I agree with you. He looks to be a lock for a future NBA slam dunk contest around All-Star time. And Chris Singleton is another young man that has shown a lot in the last couple of years. This is a guy who can be used in a lot of roles for the Washington Wizards, and they're a team that still has a lot of holes to be filled. So you got to give Ernie Grunfeld some credit. He's done a terrible, terrible, terrible job in the last few years with what's been going on with in the locker room and with the franchise and with the players that he's had on the roster, and then basically getting rid of them for a bunch of magic beans. And Flip Saunders has not really done a good job as being able to corral that team together, as we've seen, you know, over the last couple of years, first with the Gilbert Arenas situation, and then last year, before they traded Arenas was basically making up his own rules as well. And I'm not sure that Flip Saunders is really a good fit for that team. But Grunfeld, I think, basically exonerated himself a little bit with this draft because they picked up two very, very good players. And as you mentioned, John Wall is another guy who's going to be a future great NBA point guard. I'm not sure if I would say an all-star in this current era when we're dealing with guys like Chris Paul and Derrick Rose and Rajon Rondo and Deron Williams, to name just a few. But he's going to be a very good point guard in the NBA for the next few years, and I think they're finally turning the corner. After injuries basically racked that team for a lot of years, and then, of course, the arena situation a couple of years ago caused them to basically destroy the team and trade everybody.
Yeah, it was the best thing they could do as far as, you know, blowing that team up with, had Caron Butler, Jameson, really an underachieving team. When you look at that roster that they had 4 or 5 seasons ago, and they really were underachieving, I'd say probably about 95% of the time. They managed to get in the playoffs as a 4 or 5 seed, but really an underachieving team, as much talent as they had. Looking at the Utah Jazz here in the draft, quiet, you know, just Jerry Sloan-like, even though he's not there anymore, but very quietly had a very nice draft. They had 2 picks. They made, you know, the big deal with Deron Williams, landing him in New Jersey now. And they get the center from Kentucky, Enes Kanter. And they also get Alec Burks from Colorado, who I really like a lot. Decent size, and guy who can really shoot it well as a willing passer.
I agree. Kanter came up big time over the last few weeks in the minds of NBA executives. This was a guy that was looked at as probably the pick just a few weeks ago and made it all the way up to number 3. And there was even discussions that Minnesota was going to pick him possibly with the 2 pick. And I like Burks an awful lot as well. Again, a very heady young player and a guy that's probably going to help them an awful lot. And they made a nice trade last year, you know, getting rid of Deron and picking up some nice young talent from New Jersey, and they're a team that should start to gel in the next year, and whether they make the playoffs or not next year in a very tough NBA West remains to be seen. But I think they've again turned the corner, and their rebuilding process is very, very well underway. And they're going to be in the playoffs, if not this coming season, by the following season for sure.
Yeah, I think Utah has a lot more talent than people realize. I mean, you have Jefferson is there, Millsap. I think it's probably going to end up being a trading piece. Then you have DeMarcus Cousins is out there as well, right? With the trade.
Yep, absolutely.
Yeah, so I mean, and you have Devin Harris, who he's kind of floated around from Dallas, New Jersey, and I think that he's finally going to get a chance to prove that he can be the point guard for a team, which I think that he can, given the right tools and pieces around him, and I think they have that in Utah. You know, moving forward, the West is pretty crazy when you look at some of these teams with Houston's, their draft that they had, Sacramento Kings. Another team that has a lot of young talent, and they end up with a trade with the Bobcats and land themselves Jimmer Fredette from BYU. How much of a green light is he going to get on that team with Tyreek Evans and company?
I think he's turned into the media darling of the NBA draft this past season, and a young man who's got a lot of talent. And I think they allowed Beno Udra, who was the guy who's been the point guard the last couple of years, to be able to handle the ball. And I think they're going to allow Fredette to do the same thing. The kid, again, is somebody who is a natural at his position and really thinks pass first and shoot second. And I think his players around him are going to appreciate that as a good distributor of the ball, somebody who showed a lot of good court vision while he was playing for BYU. Your thoughts?
I like Jim Merlot. A lot of people question the defensive side, and I think that he has enough. I think he has enough in him to commit to that side of the ball. But that style that they play in Sacramento really does fit him. I just worry about him having too much of a green light and taking his poor shot selection at BYU was kind of forced because he was really the only scoring option they had at BYU in a lot of games. So I wonder if that's going to continue in the pros. I don't see that it will. I'd be curious to see his shot selection. I'd be curious to see his shot selection because he's going to have a lot of other tools around him and a young Sacramento team that can really get up and down the floor, a lot of athletic players there. I think he's going to be okay. I think, it's going to, any rookie is going to take some time to adjust to the game. But I think Jimmer is real deal. I think he's going to be a nice player. I don't know if he's necessarily going to be an all-star. I think this draft wasn't necessarily about all-stars. I think this draft was about finding role players who can, be a part of something bigger. And that's, not necessarily getting to the playoffs, but being part of a championship team. These guys are guys you're going to see on teams in 3-4 years that are part of championship teams in the future. Also, that trade, we're talking Sacramento, you look at the Charlotte Bobcats, another team who had a fabulous draft, Michael Jordan and company. He brought in the old executives from Portland, decided to basically blow this team up. They send, Steven Jackson, everybody out of town. They get Bismarck Biyombo, who is kind of like a more athletic Ben Wallace. And they also get basically the MVP of the NCAA tournament, Kemba Walker from UConn. They really filled two holes on their roster. And I think with Kemba Walker and DJ Augustine in Charlotte, I think it's a promising future and a promising backcourt.
I cannot understand for the life of me why this young man did not impress NBA teams more than he did and why he dropped as far as he did in the draft. This kid did everything at UConn and graduated in 3 years. I mean, he's a bright young man. He showed his athleticism. He carried UConn to the NCAA title. Why this young man fell all the way as far as he did, I have no idea. For sure, the Charlotte Bobcats got this deal of the 2011 draft with getting Kemba Walker where they did at the number 9 pick. As far as Biyombo, I've been calling him Dikembe Mutombo Jr. because he reminds me very, very much of a young Dikembe Mutombo. All he needs is a finger wag. This is not a guy who's going to score a lot, but he's going to shut down his opposing player. And that's what they need on that team, big time, big time. They decided that when they traded Gerald Henderson last year that they were going to go into rebuild mode, and that's exactly what they've done. Excuse me, Gerald Wallace last year, and that's exactly what they've done with trading Steven Jackson in this draft. I think Paul Silas is a guy that's going to be able to handle this young talent and mold it together. And I see them becoming a very successful team in the not-too-distant future for sure.
Yeah, it looks like, a lot of teams going with the youth movement. I mean, that Charlotte team has basically been floating around the 7th or 8th seed in the NBA for a couple seasons, and that's really one of the worst places to really be at. I mean, yeah, it's nice to get into the playoffs, but if you don't, exceed that, 6th, 7th, 8th seed spot, you're just kind of floating around in the middle of the pack and not getting – just kind of floating and not getting anywhere. So I think it was really a wise move by Jordan and company to really, roll the dice and say, let's scrap this team and get two young, solid players. And Kemba Walker, 5 games, 5 nights, Big East tournament. Anyone who saw any of those games will know that Kemba Walker has speed, quickness, and the ability to score. Not necessarily a great shooter, but when it came time to score the basketball, he found the way to do it. And heck, the kid won a national title. I mean, what can you take from him, away from him than that? I mean, he was a one-man wrecking crew in that Big East tournament, something really none of us will probably ever see again. One of the most amazing tournament runs you'll see.
It was a special, special time for a very talented young man, and as I said, very, very bright as well. The thing that may impress me the most is the fact that this young man, with a very, very busy basketball schedule, was able to graduate from Duke in 3 years. UConn, 3 years.
Yep. Yeah, I mean, that's very impressive. And for him to fall to number nine, again, was kind of a shock. But I think, he, you know, a lot of people question his size and, you know, being able to play in the league. But I think he can play in the league. I don't know if it's an all-star caliber, but this guy has serious quickness and serious speed at the point guard position, which, you know, you look at the league now, especially in the Eastern Conference, Rajon Rondo, Deron Williams, Derrick Rose, you know, the list goes on and on, Chauncey Billups in New York. So, I mean, there are some serious point guards in the East, and I think Kemba Walker is up for the challenge.
Now, I agree. My head scratcher,
Jeff, goes to the New York Knicks, and I'll tell you why. I really, really like Kenneth Faried. I watched him play at Morehead State. I watched him play in this tournament. This guy had more rebounds than Tim Duncan and Derek Coleman in college. This guy is a relentless game changer. You don't have to run plays for him. He's happy with just doing the dirty work, diving for loose balls, playing defense, running the floor, and rebounding and crashing the offensive glass and dunking the ball on your head. And that's exactly what the New York Knicks needed. And I thought number 17 came up and Kenneth Faried's name was on the board. I was like, you know what? They're going to take this kid. How could you not take this kid? And then they end up drafting Iman Shumpert from Georgia Tech. Honestly, I don't know a lot about this young man. Looking at the scouting report, he's a good perimeter defender. And that's pretty much it. I don't know about his shooting skills or anything else. Kind of an unknown. What are your thoughts as far as the Knicks drafting this young man from Georgia Tech?
Mike D'Antoni has been given a message by the front office. It's time to play defense. And that's why they drafted this young man, as kind of a show to the organization that they're going to take defense seriously this year. The kid is a defensive specialist. He really, truly is. And I think, though the New York fans booed him at the draft last week at the Prudential Center, I think they're going to be singing a different tune once they see this young man on the court. No, he's not going to score a lot of points. But on a team that really has not played defense since D'Antoni has joined that organization, or for that matter, since the Isaiah Thomas era began, this is a young man that's going to set a tone on the floor and going to be kind of a Bruce Bowen type. And I think those two names are going to be linked together more and more as his NBA career progresses. He showed me a lot in the few games that I saw this kid play. And he's in the other guy's shorts all the time. And I think he's going to be a nice addition to the New York Knicks. You know, they picked Danilo Gallinari a couple of years ago, and the Knicks fans booed him, and then they were cheering him just before he was traded to the Denver Nuggets. So I think Donnie Walsh in his last draft for the New York Knicks made a nice pick. I agree with you on Kenneth Faried, and I think he's going to be a great, great addition to the Denver Nuggets, a young man that just absolutely devours the boards, glass cleaner extraordinaire. And I could see the Knicks taking him, but, does he play backup behind Amari, or do you try making one of them the center?
True. Yeah, I guess I could kind of see the dilemma there. I mean, they have, what, Ronnie Turioff at center. So, I mean, I think Faried is athletic enough and strong enough to probably play center, maybe not as a starting role, but I think that he's definitely strong enough to play that as a backup role, or even a sixth man. I just thought that the Knicks really needed someone underneath, to guard the paint and rebound, is what I was looking at as far as the New York Knicks, as far as progressing. But again, if this kid can guard the perimeter, that's one building block. I still think the Knicks need size and strength inside in the paint.
I agree, but I see this kid more as a five, as a four than I do as a five, and I think he would be playing out of his zone if he tried to play even as a backup center position for the Knicks.
I definitely understand that. I think he's going to fit in with Denver. I do think that's correct on that. He's kind of the heir apparent of Kenyon Martin.
I was just going to say exactly that. I have the feeling that Kenyon Martin's days in Denver are coming to an end, and he will be playing for another team come next season. I truly see the handwriting on the wall, And not really being a Kenyon Martin fan from my years of dealing with him in locker rooms, I'm not too sorry to say that.
Yeah, he's an interesting character. He played college ball in Cincinnati. He's kind of had his ups and downs. Really kind of overrated. He had the microfracture surgery, and it's really never really been the same player. Not necessarily a skilled player. He was more of a just our overpower and out muscle guys. And as he's gotten later in his career, realized that, that's not going to cut it in the NBA. At some point, you have to have some actual skill and a basketball IQ. And I don't think his basketball IQ and skill level as a basketball player really measures up to his physical attributes.
The surgery that he had when he was with the New Jersey Nets really hampered his career. He was a guy who was a pure athlete when he was playing for the Bearcats and for the Nets. And a guy that really just existed on his talent, as we've seen a lot of players do in the NBA. Darius Miles comes to mind very, very quickly, and then when his athleticism started to desert him, he couldn't adjust. And though Kenyon has been in the league a lot longer than Darius Miles was, this is a guy who was really a shadow of his former self when he was playing in his glory days with the New Jersey Nets.
Kenyon Martin, I'd be interested to see where he would end up. And I know J.R. Smith is a free agent for Denver as well. I don't know if they're going to retain him or not. Be interesting to see. Moving on with the NBA draft recap here on Unsigned. My name is Ryan. We have special guest Jeff Sack on the show. Moving on here now, Jeff. I'll jump around. I'm kind of jumping around on the board here a little bit on that draft board, but I know you have to really like what the Boston Celtics did. I actually really enjoy what they did, adding, Juwan Johnson from Purdue, a guy who I am really high on, really athletic, good shooter. And then they pick up his backcourt teammate, Antoine Moore, again, another athletic guy who can really score the basketball, something Boston really needed. They needed athletic youth coming off the bench, and they really addressed that in the draft this year.
Absolutely, absolutely. And growing up a Celtics fan, this is a very, very good draft for the team. And they needed that infusion of youth and athleticism, as you just mentioned. You can't say enough good things about Juwan Johnson. He gives them a very, very athletic big man that's going to help them big time as Garnett's glory days seem to be coming to an end. And they lost Nenad Krstić and Shaquille O'Neal over the last couple of months as Shaq is hanging them up, and Krstić is going to play in Russia next year for Moscow. So they needed size for sure, and I agree they needed the scoring that they're going to get from their second-round pick. So it's going to be an interesting season to see what goes on. It was nice to see Doc Rivers sign for a long-term pact of 5 years. He did that because he sat down with Danny Ainge and said, I'm not going to sit here for the next 5 years and watch a team slowly fade away like the Bird, Parrish, McHale Celtics did, and Ainge had to have assured him that wasn't going to be the case, and I think this draft shows that they are moving in the right direction.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, are they going to keep Jeff Green? Because it's very interesting to me to have Juwan Johnson, Jeff Green, and Antoine Moore coming off your bench. I mean, that is three really athletic, versatile players, young players to boot, that can guard multiple positions and really can almost score from anywhere on the floor. Very interesting rotation they have there going on in Boston.
Absolutely, and they did tender Green an offer today, so he is a restricted free agent, meaning they can match any other offer by any other team in the NBA. And I know that he likes it there, and they seem to like him very, very much. He started to get a lot more minutes during that Miami series and showed that he can fit in with the Boston Celtics. It took him a while to adjust, and I think that trade was rather traumatic for him because he had been so close to Kevin Durant at Oklahoma City. It is ironic, of course, that the Celtics originally drafted him and then traded him in the deal that brought Ray Allen to the Celtics when they were still the Seattle Supersonics. So he's ended up with the team that originally drafted him, and I think he's another young athlete on that team, along with Rajon Rondo, and we will see if Glenn Davis comes back. That are going to help the Celtics get through these next couple of years as the older big three starts to fade in the background, and guys like Johnson and guys like Rajon and guys like Jeff Green step to the fore.
I 100% agree. I'm really high on Juwan Johnson. I said, even a couple months on the show that I thought he should have been a top 15 pick, easy, if not a top 10. And I also said last week on the show, in 3 to 5 years from now, when you look at this draft, Juwan Johnson will be in the top five best players out of this draft. I have no doubt about it in my mind. You know, I got to see him play a lot of Purdue playing against Ohio State. Some of it was good for Ohio State, and a lot of it was not very good for Ohio State. This guy could really score the basketball. When I saw him slip as far as he did in the draft, that came as a shock to me because a lot of people really were not talking about him. And then when I saw the trade, sending him to Boston, I was like, that's a perfect fit for Juwan Johnson to be at. And speaking of a guy who was in that trade, and that is Marshawn Brooks, who ends up in New Jersey, which I think is a great pick for New Jersey, and I think he's going to fit in great with Deron Williams and Avery Johnson's system.
The young man can flat-out score, Ryan. There's no ifs, yes, or buts about that, but he's got to be able to play defense, and he showed no desire to play that at Providence whatsoever. There was a sign when he was drafted, the next Kobe. And he has the ability to score as much as Kobe does, but he doesn't have Kobe's desire to play defense by any stretch of the imagination. He scored 52 points this season in a game, and the kid can light him up with anybody else in the NBA. There's no ins, ifs, or buts about that. But he's going to have to show some desire to play defense in order to make it long-term in the NBA. Again, that's what it comes down to. Offense is skill. Defense is just desire. Wanting to do it, wanting to get dirty, wanting to get beaten up a little bit, wanting to get floor burns for diving for balls, and that's what this young man's got to show. He showed no desire at all to do that at Providence, and really they never pressed him to do anything more. The kid was a scoring machine for them, but he's going to have to bring it to the next level in the NBA defensively.
Yeah, I think, in the situation in New Jersey, Avery Johnson, I think, is a very underrated coach. He did a fabulous job when he was in Dallas, I think he did a really great job this year with New Jersey. I didn't win a whole lot of games, and a lot of that was obviously because of, their roster and trades and those type of things. But I think Avery Johnson will find a way to get this kid to at least not be so indifferent on defense. And the fact that, you get to play next to a guy like Deron Williams, and you have the Lopez kid there as well. New Jersey, again, like a lot of these teams, really infusing themselves with a lot of young talent and looking to, really prosper here in the next couple seasons. The Eastern Conference, the balance of power is definitely shifting, I think. What are your thoughts on that?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And as far as Brook Lopez, I think he has the potential to be the best center in the NBA that's not named Dwight Howard. This young man was a good player at Stanford, but I saw then that I thought he was going to be a better player in the NBA because his game translated better to the NBA, and he's lived up to my predictions. This kid's a star in the making. There's no ands, ifs, or buts about that. And they were very, very smart to lock this kid up long-term. Remains to be seen what's going to happen with Williams, whether he will stay with New Jersey or not. I have a feeling he will. He's close enough to New York that he can be in the spotlight of the media. And I just don't see him going to the Knicks. I don't see him fitting in with that team. Too many stars already, and I think Deron Williams wants to be more in the spotlight than he would be able to get on that roster. So I think he's going to stay with them. And again, as I just mentioned, Brooks, there's no ands, ifs, or buts about the fact that this kid can score with anybody. He just needs to increase his defense in the NBA. And whether Avery can get that out of him or not remains to be seen. But he'll be instant offense every time he comes into a game. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah, New Jersey looking very promising. Speaking of centers, I look at the Houston Rockets here on the draft list I have. They have a lot of questions surrounding Yao Ming. I think that I'd be interesting to see if Yao Ming can come back and play at the high level he was playing before the injuries, because other than Dwight Howard, I think Yao Ming can absolutely dominate, especially in the Western Conference, can absolutely dominate the center position top to bottom. But looking at their draft, they draft one of the Morris twins, Markieff Morris. Marcus Morris, Markieff Morris went to the Phoenix Suns. Markieff Morris, a very versatile forward, a guy who's going to rebound. He has a nice face-up game, can step out 18, 20 feet and hit a jump shot. Interesting draft by Kevin McHale and the Rockets, considering some of the talent they have. Luis Scola at power forward position, bringing in Markieff Morris. So they planning on him, maybe converting him as a three?
He's a tweener. He really, truly is. He's, and that's why I think he may have fallen behind his brother a pick, even though Markieff is definitely the better talented of the duo. Markieff, as we kept hearing ad nauseum on ESPN during the draft, is older by 7 minutes. But Markieff is definitely the more talented and showed that during both their careers at Kansas. But he is more of a tweener, and I think possibly he will be a three eventually in his NBA career, but he's got to develop more ball-handling skills than he showed during his career at Kansas. And I think once he is able to do that, I have a feeling that's where he will eventually end up in the NBA. Kevin McHale called it a Kevin McHale draft when he was interviewed on NBA TV. He said, no player under 6'8", so you know I was in charge of this draft. And we shall see. As we discussed a couple of weeks ago, I loved Kevin McHale as a player, but he has not impressed me at all with his personnel skills as a general manager or with his skills as a coach on the bench during his tenure with the Minnesota Timberwolves. It remains to be seen whether that could be changed now that he's with the Rockets. But I think they got themselves a nice, nice player in Markieff Morris for sure. And kind of surprised that Markieff did get picked by the Phoenix Suns when Markieff was still on the board. But Markieff is more of a definitive four, and maybe that's why they decided to go with him, rather than go with Markieff, who, as I said, is a tweener.
Yeah, Phoenix, looking at Markieff Morris and his skill set with what they have in Phoenix, I think Markieff really maybe fits the direction they may be heading in Phoenix. They have some age on that team, Steve Nash, Grant Hill, Vince Carter. It'll be interesting to see what they're going to do, especially when the trade deadline comes around here next February. See if they're in the playoff hunt. I expect them to make one final push. If they're not, I expect them to maybe separate that team. And I said a couple weeks ago, free Steve Nash. Let's get Steve Nash on a team that has a chance to win a ring. I think, if anybody, I think Steve Nash deserves to be on a team that has a chance to make it all the way and try to win an NBA ring, much like Jason Kidd did this season with the Dallas Mavericks. Huge Steve Nash fan, two-time MVP.
Yeah, I love Steve Nash, and I would love to see him get a ring. But according to everything he's saying, he loves it in Phoenix and wants to stay with that team. So whether they are going to be, NBA title contenders or not, he just loves that organization, loves that area, and he wants to stay with them. So we shall see what happens, but I would not say it's out of the realm of possibility of seeing him traded before the season is over. I agree with you on that.
Yep. Again, a lot of questions still have to be answered before we even get to that trade deadline. We're going to get out of here a little bit. This is Ryan here on Unsigned with our special guest, Jeff Sack. We're talking NBA draft. A couple other teams I want to talk about, and one in particular is the San Antonio Spurs. Again, this team has drafted probably better than anybody in the last 12 seasons that I can recall. And again, this year in what is classified as a weak draft, they end up really picking out some real high-quality players. They get Kawhi Leonard from San Diego State at the number 15th pick. And then with the 29th pick, they get a very highly competitive and really a good shooting guard, Corey Joseph from the University of Texas. San Antonio, again, making the right moves. They send George Hill to Indiana. Good pick for Indiana, I think. But again, San Antonio comes up with, quite possibly two really diamonds in the rough.
I love Leonard. I love Leonard, and I was originally looking at him as a possibility for the four pick for the Cavaliers, because he probably is the best three in this draft that just went by, other than Derek Williams out there, if Derek Williams is a three. But this kid can create his own shot, and very, very talented young player. And again, very surprised that he dropped as far as he did. And Joseph, again, another great pick by Dave Popovich, as you just mentioned. The guy's a genius. There's no ands, ifs, or buts about it. The way he's been able to get talent that other people did not see is just a testament to him and a testament to that organization, and why they've been so successful for as long as they have been, basically since they drafted Tim Duncan and teamed him up with the Admiral all those years ago. And the success continues, as they had the second-best record in the NBA during the regular season this past year. And, of course, they were upset by the Memphis Grizzlies in the first round of the playoffs. But I think they ran out of gas more than anything else. And, again, they needed some infusion of youth. There was some talk that Tony Parker was on the trading block. But apparently Parker talked his way into staying after making some kind of ill-thought-out statements to French television right after San Antonio was eliminated, saying maybe the team's glory days were behind him, and then he basically took that back, and I guess he apologized enough that he saved himself from being traded from the roster. George Hill, a very, very talented young player, showed what he could do when Parker's been down over the last couple of seasons, and I think he's going to be a very nice addition to the Pacers, team that made the playoffs for the first time in a lot of years. And hopefully Frank Vogel is finally given that job permanently, because he deserves it after what he did last year. And I think Larry Bird is just waiting for him to get the right assistance in order for him to submit that list to team owner Herb Simon. And then Vogel will eventually get that job. But Indiana's another team that showed a lot of growth after they fired Jimmy O'Brien this past season under Frank Vogel. And I think they're going to go onward and upward this year. And, again, I think Hill is going to help them big time.
Yeah, George Hill, I think, is going to fit in well there with Danny Granger and a guy they drafted last year, Paul George, who really came on really strong in the second half of his rookie season. They have some other nice pieces there, Hansbrough and others. So I think the Pacers, again, another team in the East that are really starting to turn the corner and be a really competitive ball club. Now, Jeff, here's another head-scratcher for me as far as the draft's concerned here last Thursday. The Oklahoma City Thunder, great season. If not for a couple mental lapses in fourth quarters against Dallas, it very well could have been them playing the Miami Heat instead of Dallas. But you look at their draft here at number 24. Again, they made the trade with bringing Perkins in. They have a lot of great pieces. James Harden, who I love. Reggie Jackson, guard of Boston College, who did not and basically refused to work out with any team. Didn't work out at all. Was drafted by the Oklahoma City Thunder. Now, my question to you, Jeff, is this. Does this set a precedent that is this a bad statement by a team and a player in the draft? Saying, yeah, we promised to draft you, just don't work out with anybody else.
Well, that's exactly what happened. It is the fact that Oklahoma City had told them back in April that we have targeted you as the guy we want to draft, and we're making a verbal commitment to you right now. Of course, we can't put anything in writing because it would be against NBA bylaws, but we don't want to see you working out for anybody else, and if you hold to that, we promise we will pick you with that 24th pick. And I think he's a guy that's going to be a nice addition to their backcourt, along with Russell Westbrook, who is an all-star in the making, as far as I'm concerned. And they could have a backcourt for the next few years with that duo. Kendrick Perkins didn't really gel with that team as quickly as I expected him to. A guy who showed a lot of talent with the Boston Celtics, basically with a veteran team. He's got to be more of a leader with this Oklahoma City Thunder team, because right now their two leaders are Westbrook and Durant, who are both about the same age as Perkins, so he's going to have to step to the forefront and show a lot more leadership ability than he did this past season. But does it set a bad precedent? I can see your point in a way, but I don't know that I really have a problem with that either. I mean, if you see a player out there that you really want to get, and as long as you're not breaking any rules or breaking any bylaws by making it only a verbal commitment, and at this point that's the way the NBA bylaws stand, I think it's kind of going through a loophole in the system, and frankly, I don't see a problem with it, but you seem to.
Yeah, I just think that I understand the verbal commitment and that, you know, it's within their right to do that. I just fear that this sets up something that, you know, we may see in the future where teams start, you know, making promises to guys in the draft that, hey, you know, if you don't work out with any other team, I just think that, it's a rocky road to go down if you start seeing other teams do this and what level they go to enforce it. That's really my only take on it, is that I think it's a slippery slope when you get into, you know, having teams promising things to these guys out of college before the draft happens. It's not something that's happened a lot, obviously, but I just think, you know, it's the first time I ever remember something like this happening that I can recall. I just think it's a slippery slope, and I hope that we don't see a lot of it happening with more teams and future drafts.
I just look at it as an alternative to making a deal with another team before drafting a player, saying, we'll draft this guy if you draft this guy, and then we'll trade him plus another pick or another player in order to get him, because we're not going to be able to get him at our pick. You're taking out the middleman by negotiating with the athlete instead of another team, but basically it's the same process. You're just taking out the middleman. That's the way I'm perceiving it.
Yeah, no, I understand where you're coming from there, you know, as far as, you know, when they trade picks and, you know, you draft 7, I draft 10, and let's, you know, throw a, you know, second round pick next year and you draft who I want, so on and so forth. It's just kind of interesting how this, you know, kind of came to be at him ending up in Oklahoma City. But again, you know, I just didn't necessarily like how that kind of went down. I mean, just kind of thought it was a little strange. You don't see that a whole lot with teams making promises such as that to a player at pick 24. I just think it's a little strange to see. I would prefer to, I guess maybe I'm a, I don't know. It just didn't really fit with me. I might have lost for words as far as it just kind of rubbed me the wrong way for whatever reason. For words I can't come to mind right now. But looking again, here's a kind of a jab to the Cleveland natives. The Miami Heat trading into the first round and drafting Norris Cole from Cleveland State to come play with them, which is actually a great pickup for the Miami Heat. The only thing I worry about for people of Cleveland is all the Miami Heat jerseys that you're going to get to see at Cleveland State because Norris Cole is playing there now.
And he addressed that issue yesterday when they introduced him to the city of Miami. And the first thing they asked the Dayton native was, what are your thoughts on LeBron James? And are you a LeBron James hater because you grew up in Ohio and you played for Cleveland State? And Cole, to his credit, said the right things. He said, no, I was never a LeBron hater. A lot of my friends were, and there was a lot of talk anti-LeBron on the team and with the gang that I hung with, but I was never part of that talk, and I respect LeBron as a player, and he did what he had to do, and what else would you expect the young man to say after being drafted
exactly.
by that team?
Yeah.
So whether he believes it or not, that he said the right thing. And, yeah, it will be very interesting to see whether there will be Miami Heat jerseys at CSU games next year or whether there will be Norris Cole jerseys at Cavaliers games next year. You're certainly not going to see any LeBron James Miami Heat jerseys by anybody, not if they want to live in that arena by any stretch of the imagination. Not that I'm calling for another Los Angeles Dodgers, San Francisco Giants situation by any stretch of the imagination.
Yeah, well, yeah, exactly, yes.
You really have to have rocks in your head to walk into the queue with LeBron James Miami Heat jersey on and to sit through a game at Quicken Loans Arena. You really, truly would.
I guess if you like getting bathed in Coors Light, that's what you'd probably want to go do, is wear a LeBron jersey and go sit courtside. Have some Coors Light. Tap the Rockies, buddy. All right, go. Hey, anything else you would like to add here as we close up on the draft recap, Jeff?
No, it's an interesting draft. As we said from the top, a lot of moves, a lot more moves than we've seen in an NBA draft in a lot of years, a lot of trades of draft picks, and there were some interesting trades of players as well. One thing that I would like to touch upon is the trade that the Denver Nuggets and the Portland Trail Blazers made on draft night, which I think is a win-win situation for both teams, and that's trading Andre Miller to the Portland Trail Blazers, to the Denver Nuggets for Raymond Felton. This is a guy now who's on his fourth team in the last year, as he started out with the Charlotte Bobcats, of course, and played his first five seasons in the association for them, and then signed a free agent contract with the New York Knicks, along with Amari Stoudemire. He signed a two-year deal, expecting to bring the New York Knicks back to the playoffs this past season, and the Knicks made the playoffs, but they made it without Felton, as he was traded in February, along with that package that brought Carmelo Anthony and Chauncey Billups to the Knicks, to the Denver Nuggets. And the Nuggets were invigorated by that trade and made the playoffs. But unfortunately, Felton was relegated to a role coming off the bench, which he was not used to, being a starter for most of his career with Charlotte and being a starter with the New York Knicks for 54 games and having a career season while he was there. And he showed that he has the skills to be a very good point guard in the NBA. Andre Miller was not getting along well with Nate McMillan. They've had their battles over the past couple of years. First, there was a battle because of the log jam at point guard, and they ended up breaking that up by making the trade to the Lakers and getting rid of their former starter. But McMillan and Miller were still having words this past season, and George Karl absolutely adores Andre Miller. Was very, very sorry when he went and was traded to Philadelphia in the trade that brought Allen Iverson to the Nuggets all those years ago, and is ecstatic to have him back. And Miller will probably play off the bench for the Nuggets, but he's going to be a good, good mentor for that team, and he's a quiet leader who's always been a classy guy and one of the most underrated point guards in the NBA from his days with the Cleveland Cavaliers. And I think that's going to be a great trade for both teams. Portland right now is a team that's kind of has a bunch of questions that need to be answered. First and foremost, the health of Brandon Roy. He had, of course, double knee surgery during the season, and he came back on pure guts to play in the playoffs, and he played off the bench, of course, and only saw brief flashes of the all-star Brandon Roy that was around just a few years ago. But questions remain about his career, and there were rumors that the Nuggets wanted him to retire during this offseason. Whether that happens or not remains to be seen, and whether he still has the ability to play at the level he once played at remains to be seen. The other big question mark, of course, is Greg Oden, and a guy who's played only 81 games now since he was drafted with the number one pick in 2007 as the Trailblazers decided to go with him over Kevin Durant and made a very tragic mistake. Remains to be seen whether they bring him back, and it also remains to be seen whether he can play at all this year, because that's still not determined. Right now, he's nowhere near being able to play, and there have been reports that he could sit out yet another season. So it's going to be interesting to see what Portland does as far as those two players. Basically, LaMarcus Aldridge, Marcus Camby, and Andre Miller carried that team to the playoffs last year. Miller's now gone. Felton can fill that role. And I think Felton showed that he had the capability of being a very, very good point guard in the NBA with the New York Knicks. And I think he's going to show that again with the Portland Trail Blazers. So a rare trade that really helps both sides, Ryan, and that was nice to see.
Yeah, I think Andre Miller, I think he went like 580 some odd games without missing a game. Really a true Iron Man at the point guard position. Guy has been a true professional throughout his whole career. I think he's going to mentor and be a great mentor for Ty Lawson and Denver at the point guard position. And, you know, again, him and George Karl do get along well. Looking at Raymond Felton, I thought he kind of got a raw deal. I think he played very well for the New York Knicks and then, you know, just really never meshed with Denver at all last year, you know, coming off the bench, really kind of really didn't really have a full role on that team. Brandon Roy is a guy. I really like Brandon Roy's game a lot from when he first came in the league with Portland on the draft night. I was like that, you know, and Minnesota is actually coincidentally enough traded Brandon Roy draft night to Portland Trailblazers for Randy Foy, I believe, if memory serves me right. So,
you are correct.
I remember then going, what are they thinking? Brandon Roy is a stud. You know, the kid can play. And it's unfortunate the injuries that he's had and Greg Oden. That's a NBA tragic story as well. I really think that if Greg Oden could have been healthy or if ever gets healthy, I think will be a solid, solid NBA player. I just don't know at this point if it'll ever happen, unfortunately. And LaMarcus Aldridge, I thought, was an NBA all-star snub this year. But Portland,
I agree with 1,000% on that.
Yeah, I think Portland is going to be a team to be reckoned with. I think Jared Wall still has a lot of good basketball left in him, and I think Raymond Felton is going to fit perfect in that starting lineup, especially if Brandon Roy can come back and play at 80% of what he was. I'd like to see him come back as the Brandon Roy who was the deadly shooter assassin and just could do everything all over the place on both sides of the court. But it remains to be seen if he can do that. I hope he does. I'm a Brandon Roy fan, and I think a lot of people lose sight of how really good Brandon Roy was because he plays out in Portland. They don't get as much notoriety as, you know, you would here on the East Coast with, you know, New York and New Jersey and Boston and other teams, or, you know, L.A. and, you know, Dallas and, you know, teams in Texas. Portland kind of flies under the radar year after year, but they have a lot of nice talent up there. Interesting to see how they put everything together with Raymond Felton being there. Jeff, looking at, we close out the draft here. Now we look at, as I've been calling it, the big elephant in the room that's been kind of, you know, waiting, like, all right, July 1st is coming, and we look at the NBA lockout. As good as the season was this past season, the ratings are through the roof, higher than they've been in 12 years. The playoffs were really compelling. The NBA Finals, given the storyline with LeBron James and his comments, as you alluded to, and we've talked about on the show, his comments, you know, and I had made a joke with Daryl Ryder when he was here a couple weeks ago. It's not whether you win or lose, Jeff. It's how you disparage the pathetic lives of people who allow you to bounce an inflatable ball.
Very good. Very good. The NBA lockout. It will absolutely destroy the NBA, Ryan, if it goes long term. And that is something that I am very, very afraid of at this point. Things are not looking good at all for negotiations to be able to be successfully ended by June 30th, which is the D-date. And I am hoping with every fiber of my being that Commissioner David Stern and the NBA team owners decide to extend negotiations in good faith and not call a lockout, because once they do that, there are going to be a lot of negative vibes in that room, and it's going to make negotiations drag out even longer than they would be if there is a good faith effort and an extension. NBA owners are asking for an awful lot, and as we talked about on the phone earlier, they're basically asking the players to put the genie back in the bottle, and you can't do that. It just isn't done. As Mike had said, when we were speaking on the phone earlier tonight, there are legal contractual obligations that are due these players. And the first proposal that the NBA team owners put on the table was to reduce the guarantees on current NBA contracts. Now, they've taken that proposal off the table, realizing how ludicrous it absolutely is. But there are still a lot more things that the NBA owners are looking at that are absolutely trying to undermine, in my mind, the Players Association and to put the players in a no-win situation and really not negotiating in a good faith effort. There right now is $160 million that is owed to the NBA players that is sitting in an escrow fund. The reason that money is there is to ensure that the players did not get more than their allocated percent, which is 57% of all NBA revenues during the season. They didn't. And if they do not get the $160 million, their revenue share would go down to 54.6%. The NBA owners want to keep that money. They believe that that money belongs to them. And even though it is contractually owed to the NBA players, they don't want to give that up. They're also asking the NBA players to go back to just getting about 50% of NBA revenue, and they want a 10-year deal. The players have countered with going back to 54%, and they want a 5-year deal, and they also want the cap to remain flexible. NBA owners are looking for a hard cap, and basically what that would do is to break up teams such as the Miami Heat, and Billy Hunter, who is the union president of the Players Association, basically inferred that Dan Gilbert was behind that to get back at LeBron James and the Miami Heat. Whether that is true or not, or just hyperbole by Billy Hunter, again, remains to be seen. Gilbert has not commented on those accusations by any stretch of the imagination, and if he's smart, he won't. He'll keep his mouth shut whether it's true or not. But right now, the NBA owners are asking, in my opinion, for way too much. And usually, both sides hold equal blame. In this particular situation, Ryan, I think the NBA owners are just asking for way too much. I think the players are willing to negotiate in good faith, and I just don't see the owners doing it. And as I wrote a few days ago, this is not the NFL, which is also undergoing a lockout right now. This is not MLB, which is the America's pastime. NFL, of course, is the number one sport in the United States. The NBA, though it's my favorite sport, is third at best in the United States. And they, as you just mentioned, they had a banner season with TV viewership going up at astronomical rates. Their attendance in most arenas was very, very good. And if you can't make money as an NBA owner today with the success that the NBA has gone through over the past 3-4 years with two finals with the two premier teams of the NBA, the Boston Celtics versus the Los Angeles Lakers, getting incredible ratings, and in this past finals getting even better ratings with LeBron James and the Miami Heat going up against Dirk Nowitzki and the Dallas Mavericks as the Mavericks won their first NBA title. If you can't make money as an NBA owner in that kind of an atmosphere, sell the team because you are an incompetent and you don't belong in the NBA. I have no sympathy for any NBA owner that can't make his bills at this point. And as I said, if you can't make money at this point, sell the team. But to have a lockout at this point would just kill all the momentum that the NBA has undergone in the last few years. It took a long time for the NBA to bounce back from the work stoppage in 1998-1999. And as we discussed earlier this afternoon, at that point, Shaquille O'Neal was in his prime. The Los Angeles Lakers had their three-peat, and then you had the great draft of 2003, bringing in players like LeBron and Carmelo and D. Wade and that ilk. And that's basically, and then, of course, you know, what we just mentioned, the Lakers and Celtics series and the Dallas and Miami series this past season, all brought back the casual fans. If the NBA undergoes another work stoppage, I'm not sure that those casual fans will come back. Diehards like yourself and myself will come back. There's no ands, ifs, or buts about that. Yep. But the guy or girl who was brought along because they liked the Celtics or they liked the Lakers or they wanted to root for or against LeBron James will most likely go by the wayside as the economic dollar right now, or the entertainment dollar right now in our current economy, is very, very tight, and people are not going to sit there and wait for the NBA to come back. So for them to have a work stoppage, to me, is going to be very, very detrimental to the game of basketball, and I'm hoping, as I said at the beginning, with every fiber of my being, that some way it can be avoided.
I 100% agree with you, and like you, I'm in the minority. I'm a huge basketball fan. I like basketball more than I like football and any other sport. You look at, you know, your average, you know, casual fan, that, you know, the, you know, maybe the person who was rooting against LeBron, or, you know, just, you know, happened to like a certain player of their alma mater or whatever the case may be. You know, those fans, when you look at, you know, you're talking numbers, you know, you look at that 57% revenue sharing that it's currently at. I've even heard that they want to drop that below 50%, which the union would absorb over $100 million per year in a 5-year period, as far as, you know, estimated loss in revenue. It may even be more than that. But, you know, and then, you know, there's the 10-year plan, which doesn't make any sense. Who would do a 10-year plan? It's, you know, hard to predict something 10 years from now. But you, when you look at the average fan, and, you know, they're not going to, you know, look at these numbers that we've, you know, trying to break down as far as, you know, the $2 billion revenue sharing and, you know, the 10-year, you know, service agreement, union agreement between, you know, the owners and the players. You know, they're going to look at going, okay, we have owners who make a boatload of money. We have players who obviously make a lot of money, who are basically fighting over more money. That's what the average fan is going to look at. And in this economy, and you're exactly right, you know, the entertainment dollar is, you know, it's wrapped up. People, you know, have tightened their belts, so to speak, you know, in this economy, and, you know, with everything that's going on in the world political wise, you know, we won't get into all that, but, you know, people are just going to say, you know what, it's millionaires arguing with millionaires, and so what? I'll wait for the NFL to come back, or heck with it. I'll go you know, catch minor league baseball next summer. Heck with it.
Two sets of spoiled crybabies is the way the public is going to perceive it. I agree with you 1,000%. And that's why I do not want to see a lockout. That's why I don't want to see the NBA undergo a work stoppage. As far as I'm concerned, Commissioner David Stern has to Thursday night or Friday morning declare that negotiations will continue, declare a moratorium on free agency, declare a moratorium on trades, and say we're not going to allow that until we've got a ratified NBA collective bargaining agreement. But don't lock players out. Don't set up a negative attitude in that conference room and make the players walk in there every time with their teeth gritted because they're not working right now. It's the worst atmosphere that the NBA could undergo. And hopefully David Stern and the NBA team owners will see the light as I see it and undergo the proposal that I just mentioned. I think that would be the best thing at this point because there is no way in the world this thing is going to get ratified by June 30th. Derek Fisher, who is the president of the Players Union, said we need at least another 30 days before this thing is going to get wrapped up. So there's no way in the world this thing's going to get ratified by June 30th. And the way it appears right now is we're staring at a lockout on Friday, July the 1st. And that could absolutely kill the NBA, especially if it goes into training camp and it goes into the beginning of next season. And who knows? If they miss a season, if there's not an NBA playoffs next year, I'm not sure that the NBA can bounce back the way Major League Baseball did without a World Series.
I 100% agree with you, and I heard Charles Barkley on the Dan Patrick show about a week or so ago say that he thinks that it will be a whole season. I hope he's wrong, but I mean, you know, I'm all for, you know, guys getting paid their money, and I kind of see both sides of it. I kind of see where the owners are coming from, how maybe it could be bad, you know, for teams to, you know, have these, you know, these super teams. But, you know, as much as I dislike, you know, LeBron James and what he did and how he went about doing his free agency last July. And, you know, Dwayne Wade and, you know, these guys are, you know, basically just smug and, you know, elitist to a certain extent. As bad as it's been for the NBA, it's also been good for ratings. It's also been good for business. So I think that, you know, finding a way to find a common ground, and you look at the NFL, look where the NFL is at right now. If the NBA can learn anything right now, it's look at what the NFL is at. You don't want to have a lockout. It's the NFL is ugly. It's lawyers and it's lawyers arguing with lawyers. And when you get to that point, who knows? it'll be forever before they get anything done. So
it turns off
hopefully
the fans. It turns off the fans. But the good thing for the NFL, Ryan, as we discussed earlier today, is that they are the number one league in the number one professional sports in the United States, and the fans will just flock back like sheep flocking back to the meadow. There's no doubts in my mind that once the NFL season starts, whenever that is, the NFL fans will come back to the game. You can't say the same thing about the NBA. It's not that highly loved in this country. And as we mentioned before, there's a lot of casual fans that have gravitated towards the game in the last few years, and you're going to lose them for sure. And whether they ever come back remains to be seen. And the worst, worst thing in the world would be for the NBA to go without a postseason and without an NBA Finals, because that may be a blow that they can never recover from long term. And it would hurt me because, as we've both mentioned, it's, you know, to me, it's the greatest professional sport out there. I love the athleticism. I've loved it since I was a little boy watching the dynasty of the original Boston Celtics with Bill Russell and John Havlicek and Bob Cousy and Sam Jones, and followed that team through the years. And, of course, I covered the Cleveland Cavaliers for 11 years through a lot of bad seasons with players like Lamont Murray and Clarence Witherspoon and Trayvon Langdon and the Sagana Jop, only to see the team churn around my last few years there once they got LeBron James and make it to their only NBA Finals appearance in 2007, which I was privileged to cover as well. And what I would like to see is basically, you mentioned the NFL just a couple of seconds ago, I would love to see the NBA emulate what the NFL has done and designate a player a franchise player, just so that you can't have the kind of situation that you had with the Cleveland Cavaliers this past year with LeBron James walking away. Designate one player on each team as a franchise player, and basically that player is beholden to stay with that team. I think it would help small market teams in a big, big way, and I think it could satisfy both sides without taking as much revenue out of the NBA players' pockets as a whole as they're trying to do right now. I do believe that the situation that happened with Miami needs to be addressed. That's the way I would address it rather than what the NBA owners are proposing at the present time. Your thoughts on that?
I actually like the idea of the franchise tag and having it be one season. I think that if you had that in the NBA, LeBron James plays in Cleveland one more year, and then at that point it becomes a player option or something like that afterwards after the franchise tag for one season. I don't see why that would be a bad move at all. I don't know if the players' union will go that direction or not, if they're going to like that. But I definitely think it'd be a good move for the NBA. It keeps your players, it keeps your star players in town, for maybe even if it's one more season, it still keeps them there for one more season. But then again, you have, you may have a prima donna of sorts that says, you're going to franchise tag me for one season. I'm just going to kind of half-hearted and, go through the motions for a season until my time is up and I'm out of here. So, I can kind of see some.
We've seen it go on in the present situation with Steven Jackson and Ron Artest when they were playing for Golden State and for Sacramento, respectively. So it could definitely happen. It could definitely happen. But, again, I think it would be a boon for small market teams like in Atlanta, like a Cleveland, that really revolve around one star. As Cleveland was set up to revolve around LeBron James, and who knows what would have happened had they been able to keep him this past year and add a center like a Brad Miller. They could have possibly gone all the way, especially seeing how the Celtics melted down during the playoffs against Miami. There's not to say that the Cleveland Cavaliers couldn't have beaten the Chicago Bulls and made it to the NBA Finals, and who knows how they would have done against Dirk and the Dallas Mavericks.
Yep, I agree. I think that Cleveland team, they lost a lot of pieces. Everyone thought that Cleveland team was LeBron James. I mean, if you look at all the pieces that team had lost, I mean, Delonte West, Shaquille O'Neal, LeBron James, Zydrunas Sagalskis, and then the injury to Varejao, and then midway through the season, the injury to Jameson. So, I mean, that team lost more than just LeBron James. Obviously, you know, you lose a LeBron James on your team, you know, your team is gonna, you know, is gonna hurt for a lot of things, points, rebounds, and assists. But that team lost a lot of components. But again, it would have been interesting to see if he would have stuck it out one more year, and you know, to make one final run at it, I think would have been nice. But speaking of Ron Artest, we talked about this you know, on the phone. You brought up Ron Artest. He's going to be changing his name to Meta World Peace. Now, I mentioned to you on one of your blogs that when people go to check in for him in a game next season, are they going to say peace out?
And I love that line when you said it, and I love it just as much hearing it now. Yeah, true warrior goes to Meta World Peace. What a change in attitude. But, you know, he found his calling when he started going to counseling back when the Lakers won a championship last season. And he says that turns his life around and his world around. And he wants to express that new attitude with a new name. And he joins guys like Lloyd Free, who became World Be Free, and Chad Johnson, who's now Chad Ochocinco, which is actually 5'8", not 58, as he wanted it to be.
Yep.
Or, excuse me, 85, not 85,
yep.
Not 85, as he wanted it to be. And, of course, there was Bison Gailey back in the day who played for the Denver Nuggets. I don't know if you remember him or not.
No.
He changed his name as well, and unfortunately he met a tragic end as his brother murdered him on his yacht.
Wow.
During his career with the Denver Nuggets, and that was a tragic ending. But there have been, and of course, you know, we can go back all the way to Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, who changed his name from Lew Alcindor, and Cassius Clay, who changed his name to Muhammad Ali back in the 60s. You know, it's been done for a number of reasons. In those two particular cases, we were looking at religious reasons. Jamal Wilkes did the same thing when he became Jamal Wilkes, because he converted to Muslim. And we've seen it happen for a number of reasons over the years. We saw that player in the Make-Believe Football League that NBC and TNT tried to put together a few years ago, changed his name to You Hate Me, or Me Hate Me, or what was that?
He Hate Me, I think.
Yeah,
I think it was
You Hate Me, I Hate Me, whatever it was. But we've seen some strange goings on in all professional sports over the years. And Meta World Peace ranks right up there among the strangest of them. Artest is a very, very funny guy, very sensitive guy, very proud guy, and a very moody guy. And got into a lot of very strange conversations with him over the years, as I covered him when he was with a myriad of teams over the years. And you never really know what's going on his head, and the eyes always look shielded, and he always seems like he's keeping something from you, and he always seems like he's having the last laugh on you. So it remains to be seen what exactly Meta World Peace is going to mean to him. There is a court date set for him to legally change his name on August 26th, and he wants the name Peace on the back of his jersey next year when he's playing for either the Los Angeles Lakers, or now there's rumors that he wants to go play in Finland for the next 3 years. Of course, he is signed up with the Los Angeles Lakers for the next 2 years, and FIBA would have to approve that for him to be able to play there, and they're not going to do that as long as he's got the contract with the Lakers. So he would have to get out of that contract with the Lakers if these reports prove true, to go play in Finland. And with Ron Artest, you never know. I mean, this guy, as I said, is a very strange bird, and you never quite know what's going on behind those eyes and in that cranium of his. So it remains to be seen where he plays next year. I don't think he's long-term for the Los Angeles Lakers one way or the other. He had a great year his first year there and was very, very much a key player in helping them get that second championship in the back-to-back situation, but really did not come through at all this past season. Had a run-in with Phil Jackson back in February, and I think his days in L.A. are numbered, and I would not be surprised to see Mitch Kupchak try to move him as they try to get more young and more athletic for the coming season. Whether he plays in Finland or not remains to be seen, but I don't really think he's got a future with the Lakers. Meta World Peace or Ron Artest or True Warrior or whatever his name is going to be next year.
Yeah, good old Ron Artest, from Mouse at the Palace to Metal World Peace, being a true character in the association, no doubt. Well, Jeff, I want to thank you again for coming on and really breaking down the NBA draft with us and talking NBA lockout. What's a way for our listeners to get a hold of you as far as your website's concerned?
I appreciate that shameless plug, as always, my friend. They can get all the latest and greatest NBA information at my website, which is NBA Overtime. The URL on that is nbaovertime.wordpress.com. We are your number one source for NBA information. We cover the NBA draft in depth. We are covering the NBA lockout as it, or possible lockout, let me say that, and hopefully it will not turn into a lockout, but the negotiations that are going on right now in the collective bargaining agreement between the NBA Players Association and the NBA team owners as we speak, and really, you're looking for some great in-depth NBA information. We are that, NBA Overtime, nbaovertime.wordpress.com, your number one source for NBA information. Ryan, I want to thank you and Mike, as always. Great, great conversation. Hope the listeners enjoy it half as much as I did. Great time as always, and look forward to coming back on with you.
We'd love to have you, Jeff, as always. Thanks again, man. Everybody, that's Jeff Sack here on Unsigned. Doesn't get much better than that. Thanks, my man.
Thank you, my brother.
Yeah, take care, Jeff. Hey, everybody, this is Ryan here on Unsigned. That was the one and only Jeff Sack. Not to be confused with Meta World Peace, a.k.a. Ron Artest. No, Jeff Sack, not many better than Mr. Jeff Sack. It is a pleasure, as always, to have him here on the Unsigned show. Again, kind of a supersized show tonight. There's a lot of things to cover in NBA draft-wise. You know, you're talking sports lockout in it. Again, we covered everything we could here. At this point, it remains to be seen what happens Friday morning, whether the NBA is going to lock out or not. And if it does, we'll have it here. We may have Jeff back on again to kind of break down the negotiations as they more than likely will be ongoing for the looming possible NBA lockout. As we continue here on Unsigned, my name is Ryan. We're going off the path. And first story of the night, off the path. This is interesting, something I came across this morning. I thought was very interesting. We've talked about Lady Gaga quite a bit on the show. We've even poked some fun at her, and we've even complimented her as far as some of her musical talent as well. But this is something I can't let slide. Now, a new class action lawsuit claims that Lady Gaga has not sent all the money raised from her wristbands for the earthquake relief in Japan for victims of the catastrophe as promised. The suit, which is being pursued by a Michigan legal network 1-800 law firm, also alleges that Lady Gaga and her partner companies overcharge fans for shipping costs in order to inflate reports of total donations, in which Gaga's camp claims was over $3 million. The 800 law firm attorney, Allison Oliver, said in a statement, "Our attention via this lawsuit is to uncover any improprieties committed by Lady Gaga and inappropriate full donations assumed by the victims of Japan." The suit claims the singer violated several federal racketeering and consumer protection laws in promoting and selling these benefit wristbands that sold for over $5 plus shipping cost. Now, Lady Gaga has been very active with charities in the past, much as many artists have been, and has raised, it's been seen raising and donating over $20,000 per night for her Monsters Ball tour to homeless shelters in cities that she's, participated and played in, which is great to see. Now, this controversy over Lady Gaga's Japanese relief funds is not really the latest. We've covered this a couple months ago on the show, where, other artists, perform for Gaddafi in Libya. Kanye West quickly folded up his Kanye West Foundation, and Madonna abandoned plans for a Build a School Foundation once it believed that there were over $3.8 million raised in the project that were unaccounted for. So you're talking $3 million for a relief effort, the tsunami in Japan, which they're still recovering from. You don't hear a lot about it in the news now, but there's still a catastrophe over there. Still a lot of work to be done. You know, these artists, these are supposed to be, you know, these are the people, they're not supposed to be, these are the people that are you know, our youth are looking up to, you know, and here they are running. I'm not saying she intentionally did this, but, you know, and it's just a suit, and, you know, it's just a presumption of, you know, it doesn't look good. You know, you look at, you know, Lady Gaga and her rise to fame as fast as it's been, and then, you know, she's made millions. She's sold millions of records across the country and worldwide. You know, why inflate the cost of shipping on bracelets that cost $5 for, you know, to do what with it? Why don't you, if you're going to inflate the cost, give the money to the people who need it most. If you're going to, you know, donate a fund or a charity to Japan and the tsunami and earthquake there, just go ahead and donate it. You're already making enough money as it is. How much money do you really need? I figured I'd pass that along to you here on Unsigned. This is Off the Path. My name is Ryan. Lady Gaga suit over, you know, over $3 million. I mean, how do you have $3 million unaccounted for? Must be nice to have $3 million unaccounted for. I don't know. Where'd it go? Just $3 million. We'll figure it out. Jeez, I tell you. Moving on here on Off the Path. Peter Falk dies at the age of 83 this past Thursday. The famous detective known as Columbo had his final investigation in his beautiful home in Beverly Hills. The 83-year-old suffered several years with Alzheimer's disease and was believed to have a form of dementia as well. So it looks like, unfortunately, he did suffer his last final years. Peter Falk became famous along with him part of Lieutenant Columbo for almost three decades. This was part not only his love and appreciation to the public, but also gained him many awards as well. His career spans over 50 years. He starred in more than 60 movies, including The Princess Bride, which was directed by Rob Reiner in 1987, seven productions directed by John Castivis, and also two nominees for Oscar as well for Best Actor in a Secondary Role in 1961 and 1962. Also, his characters for Murder, Inc. and Pocket Full of Miracles. There's a quote from Peter Falk, which I thought was interesting. He said in an interview in the past that Columbo looks like the victim of a flood. He is sorry about himself because he doesn't, because no one believes that he sees anything around him, but instead he sees everything. So after the news of his death, several Hollywood actors and actresses expressed their regret for the loss, including Jason Alexander, Fred Willard, Alyssa Milano, Deanna Delaney, and also director Jon Favreau. So the detective Columbo passed away this past Thursday. Thoughts and prayers go to his family. On to brighter news. We head to this weekend at the box office, and we'll do what we always do here. We'll start from number 10. We'll work our way up. I also have a review of The Green Lantern, which I was able to take in this afternoon. At number 10, we have Kung Fu Panda 2, animated film featuring Jack Black at $4.1 million. Number 9, we have Pirates of the Caribbean on Stranger Tides with Johnny Depp at $4.9 million. Bridesmaids still hanging in there at $5.2 million. The Hangover Part 2, $5.5 million. I absolutely love that movie. One night in Bangkok, folks. X-Men First Class, another great film, $6.6 million. Mr. Popper's Penguins, Jim Carrey film, looks to be a pretty humorous film at $10.1 million. The movie Super 8 still in the top five at $12 million. The movie Green Lantern grossed $18 million. I did not see this movie in 3D, so I can't comment on how it was filmed in that aspect. Now, as far as the action sequence and Ryan Reynolds as a superhero, I thought it was very well done. As far as the Hollywood love story, it was probably one of the most unbelievable Hollywood love stories you're ever going to see. The backstory was not very good. The action sequence and telling the story of the Green Lantern as Ryan Reynolds, I thought was very well done. Take that as you were. Number two, the movie Bad Teacher, which we talked about here a couple weeks ago, $31.6 million. And the number one film, animated film, this would be a good kids film, the movie Cars 2 at $66.1 million. A lot of good guest spots in Cars 2. Now, Bad Teacher is getting some bad reviews. But like I said last week, and I had talked with Mike, our producer and the founder of Omnis TV, it may be worth the price of admission to see Cameron Diaz do a striptease on the Corvette. Just saying. But looking at these summer movies, and there are a lot of movies coming out. Transformers, a release date has been moved up. It comes out tonight at midnight. Also coming up, Captain America, and also Tom Hanks has a new film coming out at the end of July, which we'll get into next week. But as far as the unsigned movie of the weekend, I would say I haven't seen it yet. I would say go see Transformers. If you haven't seen that, I would say either Super 8 or X-Men First Class or Can't Misses this holiday weekend if you're going to go catch a matinee. That concludes our section of Off the Path. Moving on here tonight, I have a tragic story, and I don't want to spend a whole lot of time on tragic stories considering we already, you know, talked about the death of Peter Falk. Now, this is a gentleman by the name of Austin Hatch, a young gentleman, age of 16. He's a standout Indiana school high school player with a promise to play at the University of Michigan. Right now, he's currently fighting for his life. Now, this kid, Austin Hatch, is projected to be a big-time basketball player in a couple years. Unfortunately, this accident may derail him from that. This kid has suffered and has survived his second plane crash. This kid is 16 years old and has survived two plane crashes. That's not just the tragic part of it. Another tragic side of it is Austin Hatch, 16, again from Fort Wayne, Indiana, again in critical condition as of right now, and is in a coma as we speak, as far as I know, in a Michigan hospital. Now, Austin and his father, who was the pilot, survived a 2003 plane crash that killed Austin's mother and two siblings. This plane crash that took place this past weekend killed his father and his stepmother as well. Very, very tragic. Now, he is ruled to be part of the 2013 class of recruits. The NCAA gave permission to coaches to go play at Michigan for John Beilein for his rebuilding program there, Michigan, for his basketball program. So best of luck to this Austin Hatch. I really hope the NCAA, as archaic as their rules are, really allow the University of Michigan. I'm an Ohio State fan. Forget all that. Okay, this type of thing goes out the window when you're talking a young man's life here. I really hope the NCAA and their archaic rules allow the University of Michigan to really reach out to this young man. He obviously is going to need it. You know, this man has been through a lot in the course of, an 8-year span. I mean, I thought I've lived through a lot in an 8-9 year span. This kid has survived plane wrecks, okay, and has lost every member of his family, both siblings, mother, father, and stepmother. I really hope the NCAA allows the University of Michigan to reach out to this young man and lend a hand in a time of need that he probably needs it the most. And that's all I'm going to say about that. Any updates we have on this young gentleman, Austin Hatch, from Indiana, from Fort Wayne, Indiana, we'll definitely bring to you here on Unsigned, and we'll definitely keep tabs on what's going on with that. Speaking of NCAA, the NCAA College World Series got underway last night in really a fabulous game. The University of Florida playing the defending champions, South Carolina, and one of the best school names ever, the South Carolina Gamecocks. That's right, the Gamecocks win in 11 innings. It was a thriller, I tell you. Those Gamecocks are unbelievable. They actually had the bases loaded with no outs, Florida did. Bases loaded, no outs, the game tied, and they didn't score a single run. The Gamecocks get two plays at the plate, one of them being a double play, and then come back and win on Florida's two errors in the 11th inning, thus sending the victory to the South Carolina Gamecocks. Game two is tonight. Now, it's the best of three series for College World Series. So if the Gamecocks find a way to win it tonight, they will be two-time defending NCAA College World Series champions. So I figured I'd pass that on to you here on Unsigned. Also, we head into our Major League Baseball recap. We'll go into this real quick tonight. The New York Yankees still in first place. The Red Sox a half game behind. The Red Sox and the Philadelphia Phillies are playing tonight as we speak. Cliff Lee, former Indians pitcher, Cy Young winner, is facing off against Josh Beckett of the Boston Red Sox. In my opinion, this could be a preview of the World Series. Be interesting to see how this series plays out. The Cleveland Indians are now a game back of the Detroit Tigers in the AL Central. Indians are 10-21 in the month of June. They're batting .210. They went from having an 8-game lead in the division at the start of June to being a game back behind the Detroit Tigers. And the Detroit Tigers have won 3 in a row. It's going to be tough for the Indians to come back. I think at this point they are in a slump of slumps. I don't think it's just a slump. I think we're starting to see this team kind of fade in the stretch of the season. Looking at the AL West, the Rangers still in first place. No surprise here with Hamilton and Cruz back in the lineup. They're only playing .500 ball their last 10, but again, a game and a half lead in that division. National League, the Philadelphia Phillies look to become the first team to win 50 wins tonight as they face again the Boston Red Sox, and they stretch that lead over the Atlanta Braves to 4.5 games. The Washington Nationals, who played really good baseball late, looking to replace their coach who just resigned, are 9 games back, and the Braves are 4.5 back. It looks like the Phillies are taking a commanding lead in that division. No surprise there. Moving on, NL Central, the Cincinnati Reds still kind of floating around, only 3.5 games back, and the St. Louis Cardinals, who have lost 3 in a row and have lost 7 out of their last 10. The injury of Albert Pujols has really taken its toll as they now have dropped 3 games to the first place Milwaukee Brewers. As Rob Evers would say, the Milwaukee Brewers will choke it away. Looking at the NL West, the San Francisco Giants finishing up their sweep of the Cleveland Indians, and the Indians became a national punchline Sunday night during that game as well. The San Francisco Giants, despite their injuries at the second base position and losing their all-star catcher, have won 6 games in a row and now have a 2.5 game lead over the Arizona Diamondbacks, who lost to the Cleveland Indians yesterday. That includes your Major League Baseball recap. Now, some other news I wanted to bring up. This weekend, we have the big, huge, heavyweight boxing fight, Klitschko versus Hayes in Germany. This is going to be on HBO. If you have HBO, you can watch this heavyweight fight if you have HBO. You don't have to pay $50 to watch it on the pay-per-view. This is what I'm talking about. This is a marquee turning point for boxing in the heavyweight division, David Hay versus Klitschko, Vladimir Klitschko. This is going to be a very, very good fight. These guys do not like one another. Klitschko is out to make a point. Hayes is trying to prove himself as an elite fighter. This is going to be a very classic bout Saturday night. If you have HBO, or definitely worth checking out. If you don't have HBO, find someone or a friend who does and go watch that fight. I promise you, you will enjoy this heavyweight fight coming this Saturday night. I'm rooting for Klitschko if anybody is curious. Another news I want to bring up to you tonight before we close. Lorenzo Charles, who was a star in the North Carolina State basketball team in the NCAA tournament in 1983. He was the guy who dunked the ball that beat the then Houston Cougars and the 1983 NCAA title. He died in a bus crash Monday, according to reports on CNN. Charles had been driving the bus for the past 10 years for Elite Coach. There were no passengers on board, and he slid the bus off the interstate and unfortunately suffered death in a fatal crash. Lorenzo Charles was drafted by the Atlanta Hawks in 1985. Very sad news. He was, a very good human being and will always be remembered for, the guy who beat Five Slam Jamma, which had, Hakeem Olajuwon and Clyde Drexler, that Houston team had on that 1983 team. And it was thought that, that Houston team would absolutely destroy NC State. And, he comes up with the basket and wins the game. And the iconic scene, I think everybody has seen Rudy Tomjanovic running down the court, who unfortunately is passing, sad stuff there. You have that iconic moment, and a lot of people who are associated with that iconic moment in 1983 NCAA national title game are unfortunately no longer with us. I wanted to pass that along to you as well. I hate to leave on a bad story like that, man. I kind of feel like I let everybody down now. Hey, we're leaving tonight. Last story is about a guy who died in a bus crash. But hey, this has been Unsigned. I want to give thanks to Jeff Sack, as always, for coming and talking NBA with us. Very good stuff. If you're a fan of the NBA and you want to know what your team did and you want to know about the NBA lockout, this is the show to catch. And I want to thank our producer and founder, Mike, for Omnis TV, doing a wonderful job as always. My name is Ryan. I also want to give a shout out to Cooker Caroline, like we always do. Check out her new cookbook at Cooker Caroline on Twitter. Over 100 recipes combined. all kinds of, you know, things on it as far as, you know, fried chicken, you know, desserts. Hey, summer cookouts are coming this weekend. Get it at Cooker Carolyn and get your cookbook. We'll get it shipped out to you as fast as possible so you can have a couple of those nice desserts. You show up at that cookout with triple bundt cake or the hummingbird cake, you're going to be a fan of that party. I'll tell you that right now. Again, my name is Ryan. This has been a super-sized edition of Unsigned. Seems harder to enjoy the finer things in life. Until next time, do so. Take care, everybody.